Chapter 5. The Breaking Storm. The sun stood little more than halfway down toward the horizon by the time they clambered up the well-worn, snaking path to the top of the steep-sided hill above the barns. That was the spot Ranila had chosen. It did make sense from what Elaine knew of working weather, all learned from a seafolk windfinder, to be sure. Changing anything beyond your immediate vicinity required working over long distances, which meant being able to see a long distance, much easier on the ocean than on land, except from a mountain or hilltop. It also needed a deft hand to avoid causing torrential rains or whirlwinds, or the light alone knew what elsewhere. Whatever you did, the effects spread like ripples from a stone tossed into a pond. She had no desire whatsoever to lead the circle that would use the bowl. The top of the hill was clear of brush and flat, if far from level, a rough stone table, 50 paces long and broad, with plenty of room for everybody who needed to be there and some who did not, strictly speaking. From at least 50 paces above the farm, the spectacular view stretched for miles over a patchwork quilt of farms and pastures, forests and olive groves. Far too many browns and sear yellows were mixed in with 100 shades of green, crying the need for what they were to do. Yet even so, the beauty of it struck Elaine. Despite dust in the air like a faint mist, she could see so far. The land really was quite flat here, except for those few hills. Ebu Dar lay just out of sight to the south, even if she embraced the power. Yet it seemed she should be able to see it, by straining just a little. Surely with a little effort she could see the River Eldar. A marvelous view. Not everyone was interested. "An hour wasted," Nynaeve grumbled, glaring sideways at Rihanna, and at just about everyone else. With Lan not there, it seemed she might take the opportunity to unleash her temper. "Almost an hour. Maybe more. Completely wasted." Elise is capable enough, I suppose, but you'd think Rihanna would know who was there. Light! If that fool woman faints on me again! Elaine hoped she held on a little longer. It looked to be quite a storm once she let it break. Rihanna tried to keep a cheerful, eager face, yet her hands were never still on her skirts, constantly plucking and smoothing. Kirstian simply clutched hers and sweated, appearing ready to empty her stomach any minute. When anyone looked at her, anyone at all, she shivered. The third kinswoman, Garinia, was a Saldaean merchant with a strong nose and a wide mouth, a short, slim-hipped woman, stronger than the other two, who looked not that much older than Nynaeve. A greasy dampness glistened on her pale face, and her dark eyes grew wider whenever they fell on an Aes Sedai. Elaine thought she might soon discover whether someone's eyes actually could pop out of her head. At least Garinia had stopped moaning, which she had done all the way up the hill. There really had been another pair who might have been strong enough, possibly. The kin did not pay much attention to that. But the last had gone on her way 3 days past. No one else at the farm even came close. Which was why Nynaeve was still disgusted. One reason. The other was that Garinia had been one of the very first found, passed out in the farmyard. For that matter, she fainted again the first 2 times she was roused, as soon as her eyes fell on one of the sisters. Of course, Nynaeve being Nynaeve, she was not about to admit that she should have done anything so simple as ask Elise who was still at the farm, or even tell Elise what she was looking for before the woman inquired. Nynaeve never expected anyone to have sense to know up from down, except herself. "We could be done by now," Nynaeve growled. "We could be shut of—" She almost quivered with the effort of not scowling at the seafolk as they gathered near the east end of the stone table. Ranila, gesturing emphatically, appeared to be giving instructions. Elaine would have given a pretty to hear those. Nynaeve's glares certainly took in Marilla and Kariana and Saritha, who still clutched the silk-wrapped bowl tightly. Adelius and Van Deen had remained below, sequestered with Ispan. The three sisters stood chatting together, not paying any mind to Nynaeve unless she spoke to them directly, but Marilla's gaze sometimes slipped to the windfinders, then jerked away. Her mask of serenity faltered slightly, and she licked her lips with the tip of her tongue. Had she made some mistake down below while healing them? Marilla had negotiated treaties and mediated disputes between nations. Few in the White Tower were better than she. But Elaine remembered hearing a story once, a joke of sorts, about a Damani merchant, a sea folk cargo master, and an Aes Sedai. Not many people told jokes involving Aes Sedai. Telling one might not be entirely safe. The merchant and the cargo master found an ordinary rock on the shore and proceeded to sell it back and forth between them, somehow making a profit each time. Then an Aes Sedai came along. The Damani convinced the Aes Sedai to buy the simple stone for twice what she herself had last paid. After which the Atha An Mier convinced the Aes Sedai to buy the same rock from him for twice that again. Only a joke, but it showed what people believed. Maybe the older sisters would not have done any better bargaining with the sea folk. Avienda strode straight to the edge of the cliffs as soon as she reached the hilltop, and stood staring north, motionless as a statue. After a moment, Elaine realized that she was not admiring the view. Avienda was simply staring. Gathering her skirts a bit awkwardly with the 3 angrial in her hand, she joined her friend. The cliff fell in 50-foot steps to olive groves, steep swaths of ridged gray stone, bare except for a few small, dying bushes. The drop was not really bothersome, but it was hardly the same as looking at the ground from the top of a tree, either. Strangely, looking down made Elaine feel a trifle dizzy. Avienda did not seem to notice that the edge was right at her toes. "Is something troubling you?" Elaine asked quietly. Avienda kept her gaze on the distance. "I have failed you," she said finally. Her voice was flat, empty. "I cannot form the gateway properly, and all saw me shame you. I thought a servant was one of the shadow wrought, and behaved worse than foolishly. The Atha An Mier ignore me and glare at the Aes Sedai as if I am an Aes Sedai dog yapping at their command. I pretended I could make the Shadow Runner talk for you, but no Far Dar Aes Mai is allowed to question prisoners until she has been wed to the spear for 20 years, or even to watch until she has carried it 10. I am weak and soft, Elaine. I cannot bear to shame you further. If I fail you again, I will die." Elaine's mouth went dry. That sounded too close to a promise. Gripping Avienda's arm firmly, she drew her back from the edge. Aiel could be almost as peculiar as the sea folk thought they were. She did not really think Avienda would jump off. Not really, but she was not about to take any chances. At least the other woman did not try to resist. Everyone else seemed to be engrossed in themselves, or in each other. Nynaeve had begun speaking to the Atha An Mier, both hands tight on her braid and her face almost as dark as theirs from the strain of not shouting, while they listened with contemptuous arrogance. Marilla and Saritha still guarded the bowl, but Kariana was attempting to talk with the kinswomen without much success. Rihanna answered, if blinking uneasily and licking her lips, but Christian stood trembling and silent, while Garinia's eyes were squeezed shut. Elaine kept her voice low anyway. This was none of their business. "You haven't failed anyone, least of all me, Avienda. Nothing you've done has ever shamed me, and nothing you do ever could." Avienda blinked at her doubtfully. "And you're about as weak and soft as a stone." That had to be the oddest compliment she had ever paid anyone, yet Avienda actually looked gratified. "I'll bet the sea folk are scared silly of you, too." Another strange one. It made Avienda smile, if only faintly. Elaine drew a breath. As for Ispan, she did not like even thinking about this. "I thought I could do what was necessary, too, but just letting my mind dwell on it makes my hands sweat and my stomach roil. I'd throw up if I even tried. So we share that." Avienda made the maiden hand talk sign for "You startle me." She had started teaching some of them to Elaine, though she said it was forbidden. Apparently being near sisters who were learning to be more changed that, except that it did not, really. Avienda seemed to think her explanation had been perfectly clear. "I did not mean I could not," she said aloud, "only that I do not know how. Likely I would have killed her, trying." Suddenly she smiled, much wider and warmer than before, and lightly touched Elaine's cheek. "We both have weakness in us," she whispered, "but it brings no shame so long as only we two know." "Yes," Elaine said weakly. "She just did not know how. Of course it doesn't." This woman contained more surprises than any glee man. "Here," she said, pressing the woman wrapped in her hair into Avienda's hand. "Use this in the circle." Letting the Angreal go was not easy. She had intended to use it herself, but smiles or no smiles, her friend's spirits, her near sister's spirits, needed raising. Avienda turned the small ivory figure over in her hands. Elaine could almost see her trying to decide how to give it back. "Avienda, you know how it feels when you hold as much of Sidar as you can? Think of holding almost twice as much. Really think of it. I want you to use it. Please?" Perhaps Aiel did not show a great deal on their faces, but Avienda's green eyes widened. They had discussed Angreal, considering their search, but she probably never had thought what it would be like to use one before this. "Twice as much," she murmured. "To hold all that. I can barely make myself imagine. This is a very great gift, Elaine." She touched Elaine's cheek again, pressing her fingertips. That was the Aiel equivalent of a kiss and a hug. Whatever Nynaeve had to say to the sea folk, it did not take long. She stalked away from them, twitching at her skirts furiously. Approaching Elaine, she frowned equally at Avienda and at the edge of the cliff. Usually she denied her poor head for heights, but she kept them between herself and the drop. "I have to talk to you," she muttered, guiding Elaine a little distance along the hilltop, and farther from the edge. A little way, but far enough from anyone to avoid being overheard. She drew several deep breaths before beginning in a low voice, and she did not look at Elaine.
I've been behaving like a fool. It's that bloody man's fault. When he's not right in front of me, I can hardly think of anything else, and when he is, I can hardly think at all. You have to tell me when I'm acting the fool. I depend on you, Elaine."
Her voice stayed low, but her tone became almost a wail.
"I can't afford to lose my wits in a man. Not now."
Elaine was so shocked, she could not speak for a moment. Nynaeve, admitting she had been a fool? She almost looked to see whether the sun had turned green. "It isn't Lan's fault, and you know it, Nynaeve," she said at last. She pushed away memories of her own recent thoughts about Rand. This was not the same, and the opportunity was a gift of the light. Tomorrow Nynaeve would likely try to box her ears if she said Nynaeve was being foolish. "Take hold of yourself, Nynaeve. Stop behaving like a giddy girl." Definitely not thoughts of Rand. She had not been mooning over him that badly. "You're an Aes Sedai, and you are supposed to be leading us. Lead and think." Folding her hands at her waist, Nynaeve actually hung her head.
"I'll try," she mumbled. "I will, truly. You don't know what it's like, though. I'm sorry." Elaine nearly swallowed her tongue. Nynaeve, apologizing on top of the other? Nynaeve, abashed? Maybe she was ill. It did not last, of course. Abruptly frowning at the Angreal, Nynaeve cleared her throat. "You gave one to Avienda, did you?" she said briskly. "Well, I suppose she's all right. A pity we have to let the sea folk use one. I'll wager they try to hang on to it. Well, just let them try. Which one is mine?"
With a sigh, Elaine handed her the bracelet and rings, and she stalked away, fumbling the piece of jewelry onto her left hand and calling loudly for everyone to take their places. Sometimes it was difficult to tell Nynaeve leading from Nynaeve bullying. as long as she did lead, though. The bowl of the wind sat atop its unfolded white wrappings in the center of the hilltop, a shallow, heavy disk of clear crystal 2 feet across, worked inside with thick swirling clouds. An ornate piece, yet simple when you thought of what it could do, what they hoped it could do. Nynaeve took up her place nearby, the Angreal finally clicking shut on her wrist. She worked her hand, looking surprised that the chains did not seem to inconvenience her. It fit as if made for her hand. The three kinswomen were already there, Kirstian and Garinia huddling at Rihanna's back, and appearing more frightened than ever, if that was possible. The Windfinders still stood arrayed behind Renila, almost 20 paces away. Lifting her divided skirts, Elaine met Avienda at the bowl and eyed the sea folk suspiciously. Did they intend to create a fuss? She had been afraid of exactly that from the first mention of women at the farm who might be strong enough to join the link. The Atha'an Mier were sticklers for rank enough to shame the White Tower, and Garinia's presence meant that Renila Din Callan Bluestar, Windfinder to the mistress of the ships to the Atha'an Mier, would not be part of the circle. Should not be. Renila frowned searchingly at the women around the bowl. She seemed to be weighing them, judging their capabilities. "Talan Din Gellan," she barked suddenly. "Take your station." It was like a whip crack. Even Nynaeve jumped. Talan bowed low, touching her heart, then ran to the bowl. As soon as she moved, Renila barked again. "Matara Din Junala, take your station." Matara, plump yet solid, sped on Talan's heels. Neither apprentice was old enough to have earned what the sea folk called a salt name. Once begun, Renila rattled off names quickly, sending Rainin and two other Windfinders, all of whom moved quickly, yet not so fast as the apprentices. By the number of their medallions, Naima and Risale were higher in rank than Rainin, dignified women with a quiet air of command, but markedly weaker. Then Renila paused, only for a heartbeat, yet in that rapid listing it stood out. "To Brela Din Gellan Southwind, take your station. Kyra Din Gellan Running Wave, assume the command." Elaine felt a moment of relief that Renila had not named herself, but it lasted about as long as Renila's pause had. Tabrela and Kyra exchanged one look, Tabrela grim and Kyra smug, before moving to the bowl. 8 earrings and a multitude of overlapping medallions marked each Windfinder to a clan wave mistress. Only Renila stood above them. Only Dorilla among the sea folk on the hilltop was their equal. In brocaded yellow silks, Kyra was slightly the taller, Tabrela in brocaded green somewhat sterner of face, both more than handsome women, and it did not take their names to know them blood sisters. They had the same big, almost black eyes, the same straight nose, the same strong chin. Kyra silently pointed to a spot at her right side. Tabrela did not speak either, nor did she hesitate in standing where her sister pointed, but her face was stone. With her, a circle of 13 women surrounded the bowl nearly shoulder to shoulder. Kyra's eyes almost sparkled. Tabrela's were leaden. Elaine was reminded of another of Lini's sayings, "No knife is sharper than a sister's hate." Kyra glared around the circle of women surrounding the bowl, not yet truly a circle, as though trying to fix each face in her mind, or maybe to fix her scowl in theirs. Remembering herself, Elaine hurriedly passed the last Angreal, the small amber turtle, to Talan, and started to explain how it was used. The explanation was simple, yet anyone who tried without knowing how could fumble for hours. She was not given the chance for 5 words.
"Silence!"
Kyra roared. Tattooed fists on her hips and bare feet apart, she belonged on the deck of a ship going into battle.
"There will be no talking on station without my permission. Talan, report yourself immediately on returning to your ship."
Nothing in Kyra's tone suggested that she was speaking to her own daughter. Talan bowed deeply, touching her heart, and murmured something inaudible. Kyra snorted contemptuously, and gave Elaine a glare that suggested a wish that she could order her to report herself to someone as well, before going on in a voice that might have been heard at the base of the hill.
"Today we shall do what has not been done since the breaking of the world, when our ancestors fought wind and wave gone mad. By the bowl of the winds and the mercy of the light they survived. Today we will use the bowl of the winds lost to us for more than 2,000 years and now returned. I have studied the ancient lore, studied the records of the days when our foremothers first learned the sea and the weaving of the winds, and the salt entered our blood. What is known of the bowl of the winds, I know, more than anyone else."
Her eyes cut toward her sister, a satisfied glance that Tabrela did not acknowledge, which seemed to satisfy Kyra even more.
"What the Aes Sedai cannot do, I will do today, if it pleases the light. I expect every woman to stand her station to the last. I will not accept failure."
The rest of the Atha An Mier seemed to accept that speech as expected and proper, but the kinswomen gaped at Kyra in astonishment. In Elaine's opinion, grandiose did not begin to describe it. Plainly, Kyra fully expected that the light would be pleased, and she would be most displeased if it was not. Nynaeve rolled her eyes to the heavens and opened her mouth. Kyra forestalled her.
"Nynaeve," the Windfinder announced loudly, "you will now demonstrate your skill at linking. Be about it, woman, and quickly!"
In response, Nynaeve shut her eyes tight. Her lips writhed. She looked about to burst a blood vessel.
"I assume that means I have permission to speak," she murmured.
Fortunately, too low to be heard by Kyra on the far side of the circle. Opening her eyes, she put on a smile that was quite horrible when added to the rest of her expression. She was a sour stomach and several other complaints rolled into one.
"The first thing is to embrace the true source, Kyra."
The light of Sidar suddenly shone bright around Nynaeve. She was using the Angreal on her hand already by what Elaine could feel.
"I assume you know how to do that, of course."
Ignoring the abrupt tightening of Kyra's mouth, Nynaeve went on.
"Elaine will now assist me in the demonstration, if we have your permission."
"I prepare myself to embrace the source," Elaine put in quickly, before Kyra could erupt. "But I don't actually embrace it."
She opened herself, and the Windfinders leaned forward, peering at her, though there really was nothing to see yet. Even Kirstjan and Garinia forgot their fear enough to show interest.
"While I'm at this point, the rest is up to Nynaeve."
"Now I will reach out to her," Nynaeve paused, looking at Talan. Elaine had not had a chance to tell her anything, really.
"It's much the same as with an Angreal," Nynaeve said, addressing the slender apprentice.
Kyra growled, and Talan tried to watch Nynaeve with her head down.
"You open yourself to the source through an Angreal, just as I will through Elaine, as though you mean to embrace the Angreal and the source at the same time. It isn't very difficult, really. Watch, and you'll see. When it's time to bring you into the circle, just put yourself on the brink. That way, when I embrace through you, I'll embrace through the Angreal as well."
Concentration or no concentration, sweat began to bead on Elaine's forehead, but then the heat had nothing to do with it. The true source beckoned. It throbbed, and she throbbed with it. It demanded. The longer she hung just a hair's breadth from touching the power, the worse the desire, the need, would grow. Hanging, she began to tremble slightly. Van Deen had told her that the longer you channeled, the worse that anticipation grew.
"Watch with Avienda," Nynaeve told Talan. "She knows how to..." She caught sight of Elaine's face and finished hurriedly. "Watch!"
It was not exactly the same as using an Angreal, though very close. It was not meant to be done hurriedly either. Nynaeve did not have a soft touch at best. Elaine felt as though she were being shaken. Nothing happened physically, but inside her head she seemed to be bouncing around, tumbling wildly downhill.
Worse, she was jostled toward embracing Sidar with excruciating slowness. It took less than a heartbeat, and seemed to take hours, days. She wanted to howl, but she could not breathe. Abruptly, like a dam bursting, the one power flowed through her, a rush of life and joy, of bliss, and breath left her in a long gasp of pleasure and relief so overwhelming that her legs wobbled. It was all she could do to keep from panting. Tottering, pulling herself up, she gave Nynaeve a stern look, and Nynaeve shrugged apologetically. Twice in one day. The sun had to be turning green. "I now control the flow of Sidar from her as well as my own," Nynaeve went on, not quite meeting Elaine's eyes, "and will until I let her go. Now don't fear that whoever leads the circle," she shot a frown at Kyra and sniffed, "can make you draw too much. This really is a great deal like an Angreal. The Angreal buffers you against the extra power, and in somewhat the same way, in a circle you can't be made to draw too much. In fact, in a circle you can't draw quite as much as you can otherwise." "This is dangerous," Renila broke in, shouldering roughly between Kyra and Tabrela. Her scowl took in Nynaeve, Elaine, and the sisters standing off from the circle as well. "You say that one woman can simply seize another, hold her captive, use her? How long have you Aes Sedai known this? I warn you, if you try to use it on one of us..." It was her turn to be cut off. "It doesn't work that way, Renila." Saritha touched Garinia, and she and Kirstian leaped apart to make room. The young brown eyed Nynaeve uncertainly, then folded her hands and took on a lecturing tone, as if addressing a class. With it came composure. Perhaps she did see Renila as a pupil right then. "The Tower studied this for many years, long before the Trolloc Wars. I have read every page that survives in the Tower Library of those studies. It was proven conclusively that one woman cannot form a link with another against her will. It simply cannot be done. Nothing happens. A willing surrender is necessary, just as in embracing Tusaidar itself." She sounded absolutely definite, but Renila still frowned. Too many people knew how Aes Sedai could sidestep the oath against lying. "And why did they study it?" Renila demanded. "Why was the White Tower so interested in such a thing? Perhaps you Aes Sedai still study." "That is ridiculous." Exasperation dripped from Saritha's voice. "If you must know, it was the problem of men who can channel that drew them to it. The breaking of the world was a living memory to some then. I don't suppose even very many sisters remember. It hasn't been part of the required instruction since before the Trolloc Wars. But men can be brought into a circle, too. And as the circle doesn't break even if you go to sleep, well, you can see the advantages. That was an utter failure, unfortunately. More to the point here, I say again that it is impossible to force a woman into a circle. If you doubt, try it yourself, you will see." Renila nodded, accepting at last. There was very little else to do when an Aes Sedai made a simple statement of fact. Yet Elaine wondered, what was in the pages that had not survived? She had noticed a slight change in Saritha's inflection at one point. She had questions. For later, when there were fewer ears around. When Renila and Saritha withdrew, Nynaeve twitched her divided skirts straight, plainly irritated at the interruption, and opened her mouth again. "Continue your demonstration, Nynaeve," Kyra commanded harshly. Her dark face might have been smooth as a frozen pond, but she was not very pleased either. Nynaeve's mouth worked before she could make any sound come out, and when it did, she went on in a rush, as though afraid someone else might break in. The next part of the lesson was passing control of the circle. That had to be done voluntarily, too, and even as she reached out toward Nynaeve, Elaine held her breath until she felt the subtle shift that meant she now controlled the power flowing into her, and that flowing through Nynaeve, of course. She had not been sure it would work. Nynaeve could form a circle easily, if not with any finesse, but passing guidance also involved a form of surrender.
Nynaeve had considerable difficulties relinquishing control or being brought into a circle, just as she had once had difficulty surrendering to Sidar. Which was why Elaine kept the guidance for now. It would have to be passed to Kyra, and Nynaeve might not be able to manage letting go twice. Those apologies must have been much easier for her. Elaine linked next with Avienda, so Talan could actually see how it was done with an Angreal, as much as there was to see, and it went perfectly. Avienda was a very quick study, blending in easily. Talan was quick as well, it turned out, adding her still greater Angreal-aided flow without a hitch. One by one, Elaine brought them in, and she herself almost shivered at the river of the power that streamed into her. No one yet was drawing nearly as much as she could, but it added up, especially with Angreal involved. Elaine's awareness climbed higher with each addition of Sidar. She could smell the heavy scents in the lacework gold boxes that the windfinders wore around their necks, and separate one from another. She could make out each fold and crease in everyone's clothes as sharply as if she had her nose pressed to the cloth, more sharply. She was aware of the faintest movement of the air against her hair and skin, caresses she never would have noticed without the power. That was not the whole of her awareness, of course. The link had a certain kinship to the warder bond, just as intense and somehow even more intimate. She knew that a tiny blister from climbing the hill made a spot of pain on Nynaeve's right heel. Nynaeve always talked about good stout shoes, but she had a weakness for slippers with a great deal of embroidery. Nynaeve wore a fixed frown directed at Kyra. Her arms were crossed. Her fingers, wearing the Angreal, played on the braid pulled over her right shoulder, every line of her of a piece. Yet inside she was a maelstrom of emotions. Fear, worry, anticipation, irritation, wariness, and impatience bounced over each other, and washing through it all, sometimes submerging the rest, ripples of warmth and waves of heat that threatened to burst into flame. Those last Nynaeve suppressed quickly, especially the heat, but they always returned. Elaine almost thought she could recognize them, but it was like something glimpsed from the corner of your eye that was gone when you turned your head. Surprisingly, Avienda felt fear, too, but small and tightly contained and all but swallowed by determination. Garinia and Kirstian, shaking visibly, were nearly pure terror, so strong it was amazing they could even have begun to embrace the source. What filled Rihanna to overflowing was eagerness, and no matter her skirt-smoothing. As for the Athaan Mier, even Tabrela exuded a wary alertness, and it did not take the quick darting of Matara's eyes and Rainin's to know the focus was Kyra, watching them all, impatient and commanding. Her Elaine left to last, and it was no real surprise that she had to make four tries, four, to bring the woman into the circle. Kyra was no better at yielding than Nynaeve. Elaine desperately hoped the woman had been chosen for ability, not rank. "I will now pass the circle to you," she told the Windfinder when it finally was done. "If you recall what I did with Na—" Words froze momentarily in her throat as guidance of the circle was torn from her surrender, a sensation like having a sudden burst of wind rip all of her clothes off or yank the bones out of her. She exhaled fiercely, and if it sounded close to spitting, well, so be it. "Good," Kyra said, rubbing her hands together. "Good." Her attention focused on the bowl, her head twisting this way and that as she studied it. Well, perhaps not all her attention. Rihanna started to sit down, and without looking up, Kyra snapped, "Hold your station, woman. This isn't a fish lolly. Stand till you're told to move." Startled, Rihanna jerked back to her feet, muttering under her breath, but she might as well have ceased to exist as far as Kyra was concerned. The Windfinder's eyes remained on the flattened crystal shape. Elaine felt resolve in her great enough to move a mountain. And something else, tiny and quickly stamped out. Uncertainty. Uncertainty? If after all of this the woman really did not know what to do... At that moment Kyra drew deeply.
Sidar flooded through Elaine, almost as much as she could hold. An unbroken ring of light blazed into being, joining the women in the circle, brighter wherever one used an Angreal, but nowhere faint. She watched closely as Kyra channeled, forming a complex weave of all five powers, a four-pointed star that she laid atop the bowl with what Elaine somehow was sure was exquisite precision. The star touched, and Elaine gasped. Once she had channeled a trickle into the bowl, in Telirunriod, to be sure, and only a reflection of the bowl, though still a dangerous thing to do, and that clear crystal had turned a pale blue, and the carved clouds moved. Now the bowl of the winds was blue, the bright blue of a summer sky, and fleecy white clouds billowed across it. The four-point star became five-pointed, the composition of the weave altered slightly, and the bowl was a green sea with great heaving waves. 5 points became six, and it was another sky, a different blue, darker, winter perhaps, with purple clouds heavy with rain or snow. 7 points and a grey-green sea raged in storm. 8 points and sky, 9 and sea, and suddenly Elaine felt the bowl itself drawing Sidar, a wild torrent far greater than all the circle together could manage. The changes continued unabated inside the bowl, sea to sky, waves to clouds, but a writhing, braided column of Sidar shot up from that flattish crystal disk. Fire and air, water and earth and spirit, a column of intricate lace as wide as the bowl, climbing up and up into the sky until its top rose out of sight. Kyra continued her weaving, sweat streaming down her face. She paused, seemingly only to blink salty drops away from her eyes, as she examined the images in the bowl, then laid a new weave. The pattern of the braiding in the thick column altered with every weave, subtly echoing what Kyra wove. It was a very good thing she had not wanted to focus the flows for this circle, Elaine realized. What the woman was doing required years more study than she had, many years more. Suddenly she realized something else. That ever-changing lacework of Sidar bent itself around something else, something unseen that made the column solid. She swallowed hard. The bowl was drawing Sidine as well as Sidar. Her hope that no one else had puzzled that out vanished with one glance at the other women. Half stared at the twisting column with a revulsion that should have been reserved for the Dark One. Fear grew stronger among the emotions shared in her head. Some were approaching the level of Garinia and Christian, and it was a wonder those two had not fainted. Nynaeve was a hair from sicking up, for all her suddenly too smooth face. Avienda appeared just as calm outwardly, but inside that tiny fear quivered and pulsed, trying to grow. From Kyra came only determination, as steely hard as her expression. Nothing was going to stand in Kyra's way, certainly not the mere presence of shadow-tainted Sidine mixed into her weaving. Nothing was going to stop her. She worked the flows, and abruptly spider-webs of Sidar blossomed from the unseen top of the column, like uneven spokes of a wheel, almost a solid fan to the south, sparser fans reaching north and northwest, single lacy spokes stretching in other directions. They changed as they grew, never the same from one moment to the next, spreading across the sky farther and farther, until the ends of the pattern also passed out of sight. Not just Sidar there, either, Elaine was certain. In places that spider-web caught and curved around something she could not see. Still Kyra wove, and the column danced to her bidding, Sidar and Sidine together, and the spider-web altered and flowed like a lopsided kaleidoscope spinning across the heavens, vanishing into the distance, on and on and on. Without warning, Kyra straightened, knuckling her back, and released the source completely. Column and spider-web evaporated, and she collapsed as much as sat down, breathing hard. The bowl turned clear again, but small patches of Sidar flashed and crackled around its edges. "It is done, the light willing," she said tiredly. Elaine hardly heard. That was not the way to end a circle. When Kyra let go in that way, the power disappeared from every woman simultaneously. Elaine's eyes popped. For one instant it was as though she stood atop the highest tower in the world, and suddenly the tower was not there anymore. Just an instant, yet hardly pleasant. She felt tired, if not anywhere near what she would have, had she actually done anything beyond serve as a conduit, but what she felt most was loss. Letting go of Sidar was bad enough. Having it simply vanish out of you went beyond thinking about. Others had suffered far worse than she. As the glow joining the circle winked out, Nynaeve sat down right where she stood as though her legs had melted, sat stroking the bracelet and rings, staring at it and panting. Sweat rolled down her face. "I feel like a kitchen sieve that just had the whole mill poured through it," she murmured. Carrying that much of the power had its cost, even if you did nothing, even with an Angreal. Talan wavered, a reed in the wind, casting surreptitious glances at her mother, plainly afraid to sit. Avienda stood straight, her fixed expression saying that willpower had as much to do with that as anything else. She gave a slight smile, though, and made a gesture in maiden hand talk. "Worth the price," and then another, "more," right behind. "More than worth the price." Everyone looked weary, if not so much as those who had used Angreal. The bowl of the winds went quiet at last, just a wide bowl of clear crystal, but decorated now with towering waves. Sidar still seemed to be there, though, not being wielded by anyone, not visible, but in dimly felt flashes like those that had played around the bowl at the end. Nynaeve raised her head to glower at the cloudless sky, then lowered her gaze to Kyra. "All that for what? Did we do anything or not?" A breath of air stirred across the hilltop, warm as the air in a kitchen. The windfinder struggled to her feet. "Do you think weaving the winds is like throwing the helm over on a darter?" she demanded contemptuously. "I just moved the rudder on a skimmer with a beam as broad as the world. He will take time to turn. Time to know he is supposed to turn. That he must turn. But when he does, not the father of storms himself will be able to stand in his way. I have done it, Aes Sedai, and the bowl of the winds is ours." Renila moved into the circle, kneeling beside the bowl. Carefully she began folding the white silk around it. "I will take this to the mistress of the ships," she said to Nynaeve. "We have fulfilled our part of the bargain. Now you, Aes Sedai, must fulfill the rest of yours." Marilla made a sound in her throat, but when Elaine glanced at her, the grey appeared a study in composure. "Maybe you've done your part," Nynaeve said, rising unsteadily. "Maybe. We'll see when this skimmer of yours turns, if it turns." Renila stared hard at her across the bowl, but Nynaeve ignored her. "Strange," she muttered, rubbing her temple. The bracelet and rings caught in her hair, and she grimaced. "I can almost feel an echo of Sidar. It must be this thing." "No," Elaine said slowly. "I can feel it too. Not just the dimly perceived crackling in the air, and not an echo exactly. More the shadow of an echo, so faint that it was as if she were feeling someone use Sidar at a—" She turned. On the horizon to the south, lightning flashed, dozens of bolts, vivid silver blue against the afternoon sky, very near to Ebu Dar. "A rainstorm?" Saritha said eagerly. "The weather must be righting itself already." But there were no clouds in the sky, even where the lightning forked and fell. Saritha was not strong enough to sense Sidar being wielded at that distance. Elaine shivered. She was not strong enough, unless someone was using as much as they had on this hilltop. 50 or even 100 Aes Sedai all channeling at once. "Or not one of the Forsaken," she murmured. Someone behind her moaned. "One couldn't do that," Nynaeve agreed quietly. "Maybe they didn't feel us the way we do them, maybe, but but they'll have seen, unless they're all blind. The light burn our luck. Quiet or not, she was agitated. She often called Elaine down for using language like that. Take everyone who will go to Andor with you, Elaine. I'll meet you there. Matt's in the city. I have to go back for him. Burn the boy. He came for me, and I have to. Elaine wrapped her arms around herself and drew a deep breath. Queen Tylin she left to the mercies of the light. Tylin would survive if it was possible. But Matt Quothen, her very strange, very instructive subject, her most unlikely rescuer. He had come for her, too, and offered more. And Tom Marilyn. Dear Tom, who she sometimes still wished would turn out to be her real father, and the light burn what that would make of her mother. And the boy, Alver, and Chell Vannin, and... She had to think like a queen. The rose crown is heavier than a mountain, her mother had told her, and duty will make you weep, but you must bear and do what must be done. No, she said. Then, more firmly, no. Look at you, Nynaeve. You can hardly stand. Even if we all went, what could we do? How many of the Forsaken are there? We'd die, or worse, for no gain. The Forsaken have no reason to look for Matt or the others. It's us they will be after. Nynaeve gaped at her, stubborn Nynaeve with sweat running down her face and her legs unsteady. Wonderful, gallant, foolish Nynaeve. You're saying leave him, Elaine? Avienda, talk to her. Tell her about that honor you're always going on about. Avienda hesitated, then shook her head. She was almost as sweaty as Nynaeve, and from the way she moved, just as tired. There are times to fight without hope, Nynaeve. But Elaine is right. The Shadow Sold will not be looking for Matt Cawthon. They will be after us and the bowl. He may have left the city already. If we go, we risk giving them what can undo what we have done. Wherever we send the bowl, they will be able to make us tell them who we sent it with and where. Nynaeve's face crumpled in pain. Elaine reached to put her arms around her. Shadow Spawn! Someone screamed, and suddenly women were embracing Sidar all over the hilltop. Balls of fire shot up from Mirrolilla's hands, from Kariana's and Saritha's, as fast as they could throw. A huge winged shape, enveloped in flame, tumbled out of the sky, trailing oily black smoke, falling just beyond the cliff. "There's another one!" Kirstjan shouted, pointing. A second winged creature dove away from the hill, body as big as a horse, ribbed wings spanning 30 paces or more, long neck stretched out before and longer tails streaming behind. Two figures crouched low on its back. A storm of fire rained after it, quickest of all from Avienda and the sea folk, who made no throwing gesture as part of their weaving. A hail of fire so thick it seemed that fire must be forming itself out of the air, and the thing dodged behind the hill on the other side of the farm and appeared to vanish. "Did we kill it?" Saritha asked. Her eyes shone bright, and she breathed hard in agitation. "Did we even hit it?" One of the Atha Anmier growled disgustedly. "Shadow Spawn," Marilla murmured in amazement. "Here? At least that proves it's the Forsaken in Ebudar." "Not Shadow Spawn," Elaine said hollowly. Nynaeve's face was a picture of anguish. She knew, too. "They call it Arrakhan. It's the Seanchan. We must go, Nynaeve. And take every woman at the farm with us. Whether we killed that thing or not, more will come. Anyone we leave behind will be wearing a Damani leash by tomorrow morning." Nynaeve nodded, slowly, painfully. Elaine thought she murmured, "Oh, Matt." Renyla strode up with the bowl in her arms, once more swathed in its white covering. "Some of our ships have encountered these Seanchan. If they are in Ebudar, then the ships beat to sea. My ship fights for his life, and I am not on his deck. We go now." And she formed the weave for a gateway right there. It tangled uselessly, of course, flared bright for an instant, then collapsed into nothing. But Elaine squeaked in spite of herself. "Right there in the middle of them. You aren't going anywhere from here unless you mean to stay long enough to learn this hilltop," she snapped. She hoped none of the women who had been in the circle tried the weave. Holding Sidar was the fastest way to learn a place. She could have made it work here, and very likely so could they. You aren't going to a moving ship from anywhere. I don't think it's even possible.
Marilla nodded, though that meant little. Aes Sedai believed a great many things to be true, and some of them actually were. As well if the sea folk believed it proven in any case.
Nynaeve, haggard and staring, was in no condition to do any leading at the moment, so Elaine went on. She hoped she managed to do her mother's memory proud.
But most of all, you aren't going anywhere except with us because our bargain isn't complete. The Bowl of the Winds is not yours until the weather is right.
Not precisely true, unless you twisted the words of the bargain a little. And Renila opened her mouth, but Elaine ploughed on.
And because you made a bargain with Matrim Cawthon, my subject. You go voluntarily where I want you to, or you go tied to a pack saddle. Those were the choices you accepted. So get down this hill now, Renila Din Callan Bluestar, before the Seanchan sweep down on us with an army and a few hundred women who can channel and would like nothing better than to see us collared alongside them. Now, run!
To her astonishment, they ran.